J1.
Number 17A.
We turn now to the counterfeits of principle. And we find this in compendium number 7 on page 209 in the negative section. Now, as we know, over again, that counterfeit negative beliefs arise from a misunderstanding of the true facts. So, therefore, with science, all false beliefs or errors can be analyzed, uncovered, and destroyed. But without science, these false beliefs or errors always remain an unsolved problem or enigma. So the first counterfeit negative belief we come across is personality or personal sense. And we say, well, just what is this question of personal sense or personality? Well, quite logically, we say, well, then it's a belief that we are separate, isolated egos and that we are separate egos who govern ourselves independently. And also this belief of personal sense arises from the misunderstanding of our identity principle or government principle. We say then, as far as our identity principle is concerned, that we are all the one mind, which is individualized, unchanged, harmonious, eternal, whole, and perfect. We are not separate, isolated personalities. That's the truth about our identity principle. Then we take a look at our government principle, and it says that we are governed by the divine laws, order, rule, system, method, form, and plan, which are inherent to mind. Therefore, we are not governed by our own personality or by personal opinions of other people. And also, we are not governed by an anthropomorphic God. And when we look at this question of anthropomorphic God, we can see that we are just not governed by a separate God, a God which is man-like, or a God which is in a human form. Now, this belief of an anthropomorphic God has arisen from a misunderstanding of God as being a divine sevenfold principle. And when we can see this, we can identify ourselves with a divinely sevenfold principle, of course, more than we could with a separate anthropomorphic God. And because God is a divinely sevenfold principle, then we see that this sevenfold principle is our identity principle and it's our government principle. Therefore, we are this sevenfold principle. Now we go on to another negative belief that arises, and that's that of our persecution. And this is quite interesting because people are persecuted through the whole of history for adhering to spiritual concepts or adhering to principle. And I think what we have to do is see that people only persecute something out of fear. And we see that this sense of persecution arises because somebody feels that they're going to lose something and that they feel that perhaps something will be lost if they give up their material ways for the spiritual life. I so often, as we've mentioned before, people say, well, you know, the spiritual life is so cold and abstract and we just have to keep the human warm life. Well, it's just the person's own concept of spiritual life that would make it seem cold and abstract. Of course, spiritual life isn't that at all, because life, truth, and love just show the expression and the bigness of consciousness, and love shows the beautiful realm of perfection in love. So anyhow, this belief of persecution then we know arises because somebody feels that they're going to lose something. And because they feel that they're going to lose something, and not only that, because they believe that the material life is the good life, then they fight to maintain that material life. And they will attack those who adhere to divine principle. And we say, well, why do they attack those that adhere to divine principle? Well, the reason is that principle or the statement of principle rebukes and persecutes material life. So it actually is asking to give up a false sense of life because it's a law of mind that ignorance must disappear. So if we are at ever attacked personally, I think it's more important for us to see that these attacks are not against ourselves, our own personality, so to speak. It's more or less always will be against the principle for which we stand for. And so one can always see through these attacks and see that they're not against us then, but they're just more or less given out of ignorance of what principle really is, and they're given out of, I guess one would say, fear. And then we can go on and see that another false concept is just theories and personal opinions. And we say, okay, now why do these appear? Why are there a lot of personal opinions in the world? And we say, well, this arises from a misunderstanding of principle. And because if one doesn't really understand being, then we have to speculate about being. And so then human opinions are just more or less mere speculations about reality, and they are based on a false premise of materiality. And so only a correction of human theories or false speculations can be done through going out from principle and going out from mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And then we come to this other idea, which is a negative idea, and that is that of lack of principle. So we see then that all these ideas such as hypocrisy and dishonesty and disloyalty, which is more or less a lack of principle, arises from a misunderstanding of our identity principle again. And it's because we then feel that we're separate and isolated from each other. We're separate egos. And because we feel that there are many principles governing the world, that there are many different types of theories, because of these two facts, an error arises, and this error is that we are not responsible to each other. If we feel we are separate from each other, then we are not responsible to each other. If we feel that there are many theories that are just as good as another to explain reality, then we are not responsible to the one divine principle. So this error of reasoning leads to error of action, and we then see dishonesty, disloyalty, all this coming about in relationships to other people. This just is an example of not having a unified principle and to know that we are all really one. You know, it's interesting too when we begin to see more and more in the world, if one person is dishonest to another person, they're hurting themselves and just 100 people around them. A person cannot cheat on another person without hurting themselves, the other person, and then all the other people more or less around them. One is throwing a wrench more or less into the spiritual system and causing a breakdown into a really beautiful spiritual system that exists in being. So more and more it's going to become apparent, and I think it becomes apparent in world government today, that one little dishonest act isn't going to get away with because it's affecting many people. It's affecting the whole country and not just a relationship between two people. So more and more we'll see that a dishonest act not just doesn't cause disharmony or inharmony between two people, but it affects the whole system and therefore the whole world. So now we go on then. And we come to our synonymous term, life. And synonymous term, life, is in the compendium number 8. And just turn then to your illustrative material with the ideas that characterize life. And as we've done so far with everything else, we'll just go through these ideas. Okay, now the first idea we come across is that of life principle. So as we know, if we take mind, spirit, soul as our identity principle and governing principle, and if we are obedient to this principle, then we make this principle our life principle. And when we make it this principle, our life principle, we then demonstrate and experience life, truth, and love. And when we demonstrate life, we just always will know we're demonstrating true individuality, multiplication, abundance, supply, newness, spontaneity, self-existence, eternality, and deathlessness. And you know, when we are demonstrating truth, we're just demonstrating divine consciousness, health, our true form, and etc. Or when we're demonstrating love, it's just perfection, self-fulfillment, loveliness, holiness, rest, peace, plan, and so forth. So we can see then that this whole experience of life, truth, and love does not happen by a matter of chance. It's because we are obedient to principle and we're taking the Divine Sevenfold Principle as our life principle. And we see that this experience then is not by chance. Our experience of life, it is also the effect of correct understanding. And if you turn to the illustrative material, they're just entitled The 3 Degrees, and in a brief summary, I have just outlined these 3 degrees very briefly, and you have the complete outline of the translation of immortal mind and the translation of mortal mind from our work with mind, spirit, and soul. Now, let's just look at these 3 degrees. Briefly, we've gone over them many times, but I'm building up to the 3rd degree, so I'd like to recapitulate the first two just to point up a fact that happens in the 3rd degree. Now, what we see is that we must drop entirely that whole 1st degree. We must drop that whole mortal system of reference, as we know, of mind, matter, bodies, and drop the whole sense of wanting to take mind and matter bodies as our governing principle. Because what we see is this whole belief leads only to the experience of death, human consciousness, and fear. It leads only to those physical experiences, as Mrs. Eddy gives in Science and Health, of evil beliefs, passions and appetites, fear, depraved will, self-justification, pride, envy, deceit, hatred, revenge, sin, sickness, disease, and death. These are all the physical experiences which are the result of the false premise of mind, matter, and body. We must drop those beliefs, and as we begin to drop them, we come into the realm of the 2nd degree. This is a transitional stage, and it's a point where we begin to drop that human system of reference, and we begin to learn the divine system of reference. And we begin at this point to have then a higher experience as we drop old beliefs and get hold of new understanding of reality. Our whole experience changes, and we take on now a more of a moral experience. A moral experience, as Mrs. Eddy says, of humanity, honesty, affection, compassion, hope, faith, meekness, and temperance. Now, then, as we get hold more and more of that 3rd degree, we come into a higher realm of consciousness, and as we understand mind, spirit, and soul, and claim these as our identity principle, then we begin to see that all mortal mind, matter, and body beliefs disappear. And then we begin to experience more the true life, the real truth, and perfect love. And in this 3rd degree, then, we have the experience of wisdom, as Mrs. Eddy says, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, and holiness. So on each of these degrees, you can see that our experience becomes higher. It comes from physical experience, which comes into a more moral experience, which comes into this beautiful spiritual experience when we're looking out from the divine system of reference. Now, it's this order of ideas in the 3rd degree that I'd like to have us focus on for a minute. Now, these, of course, as we know, are the order of the 7 synonymous terms. As we have seen, wisdom stands for mind, purity, spirit, spiritual understanding, soul, spiritual power, principle, love, life, health, truth, and holiness, love. Now, this sevenfold order is really important because it shows us how we can experience life, truth, and love. So let's just go through this order again very slowly, more or less, so we can just see the truth that it's trying to bring out. Now, first of all, we say wisdom or mind. Now we say to ourselves, because my mind is the divine mind, then I am the idea of intelligence. And intelligence, which I am, comes to me as wisdom. And wisdom just means the ability to know the divine facts, to know the third degree. And then we come to purity or spirit. Because I am the idea intelligence which appears as wisdom, then I have pure understanding. Or I have the faculty of discernment that enables me to separate between divine facts and illusions and to focus only on those divine facts. So when we're focusing only on divine facts, we are in our purity. Then we come to spiritual understanding and we say, now, what does this mean? Well, what we see here, that spiritual understanding is a characteristic of soul. If I focus then only on divine facts, then this brings me into the realm of definite spiritual understanding. So we see that wisdom and purity crystallize into spiritual understanding. And when I have spiritual understanding, I'm able to stand firm, you see, and claim my true identity principle, and to once and for all exchange all false beliefs for divine facts. Now we come to spiritual power as a characteristic of principle. And here we see that wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding manifest themselves as spiritual power. And it's this spiritual power then that enables me to love. It enables me to love the divine principle, and it enables me to joyfully lay down my mortal sense of life. And when I love and give up my and happily give up my mortal concept of life, then I can experience health and holiness. Now, can we see that that whole order of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, and holiness is a scientific order? It's an irresistible order, and it's an irreversible order. And we can't demonstrate those last three of love, health, and holiness, which is just life, truth, and love, until we have made the first four steps of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding that manifests itself as spiritual power. We just can't have love or health or holiness or life or truth and love unless we've gone the way of wisdom, purity, and spiritual understanding. Because what we see is that if we do not begin with wisdom, if we do not have wisdom of the divine facts, then we're not going to go very far. And without our wisdom of divine facts in its purity, then we're going to be in the danger of mixing facts with illusions. And then we see that without wisdom in its purity, there is no definite spiritual understanding. And without definite spiritual understanding, there is no spiritual power. And without spiritual power, there is no love. There is not the ability to love or to lay down our mortal concept of life. And without giving up our mortal concept of life, there can be no divine health. And without health, there can be no state of holiness. Can you see the way this order flows? It's an irresistible order, and it's an irreversible order. So to experience then the one life or love, or the one truth or health, or the one love or holiness, we must drop entirely that first degree of false belief and take up the third degree. And we must make mind, spirit, and soul then our life principle. And this life principle then we'll begin to see as we get into life that it's an omniactive life principle. It's a life principle which is expressing itself always in a multiplication sense, in abundance, in supply, in newness, in self-existence, in eternality, in deathlessness. But this life principle comes to us only as we give up our false concepts of life. So we go on then with another idea on our list which characterizes life, and we have that of Father. And as we have seen then, that life, truth, and love is a triune divine principle, love. Or it's, as we say, the triune person, Father, Son, and Mother. And as we know, Mrs. Eddy interpreted these biblical symbols of Father, Son, and Mother as life represented by the Father, as truth represented by the Son, and as love represented by the Mother. Now, when you're reading through your compendium on life and at this point of Father, we see then in compendium number 8 on page 220, we find these 5 points. And I'd like to go through them and then we'll discuss them. Number 1, it states that God as Father expresses the creative relationship of the Creator to the creation. And 2, mind is the grand creator. 3, principle governs the inseparable relationship between creator and creation. And 4, life, the fatherhood of God, further declares that the creator is forever expressed in its creation. Okay, in point 5, we see that the definition of father is consequently built up on mind, principle, and life. Mrs. Eddy says that eternal life, the one mind, the divine principle, commonly called God. Now, this is what's important for us to see, that this whole realm of life is built up on mind and the concept of mind and principle, or mind, which is our identity principle. And as we have seen, the super symbols of mind, spirit, and soul state that mind creates real and definite ideas. So what we have then is mind creator. And we have idea creation. And we say if mind did not have an idea or creation, there would be no proof of mind's existence. So we say, now who are we? So we say that we are mind hyphen idea. Or we are mind hyphen creation. And this just means that we are mind individualized yet still mind. As idea or creation, we are just mind appearing in its many forms. We go on to see then that principle as a super symbol states that mind creator and idea creation is one, and this one is mind. And then life as a super symbol states that mind creator is forever expressed in its creation or idea. So here we see then that life has to do with mind creator forever being expressed in its creation or as idea, you see. And Mrs. Eddy says that life is mind, the creator reflected in his creation. So when we come to this point of life, we see that life is all about the one mind. And it's all about the one mind being reflected in its idea. But what we must see is that idea is always the one mind, but it's the one mind expressing itself as idea. And so it's so important to always know that as we go on with the concept of life, that life then is about mind, our mind, and it's about our mind's life experience. Now, to this concept of life as father, if we touch on it very lightly, means that mind has a creative ability, that mind creates ideas, and that these ideas forever express the one mind, or that mind is constantly sustaining and supporting its idea. You see, this is all the concept of life as creator, meaning that the one mind as life is constantly sustaining and providing for its creation or its ideas. From a very high scientific sense, we see this about life as father. We see that the mind, or divine mind, our mind as life, is self-existent. Our mind as life is self-existent, meaning that it is existing out of itself and of its own origin. Now that's really big once when we can just begin to understand that the one mind, our mind as life, is self-existent. It is self-creating. It's drawing out of itself. It's self-sustaining. It's self-maintaining. It's self-supporting. It's self-providing. This means that the one mind, our mind as life, needs nothing to be added to it. It cannot exhaust itself, and it cannot wear itself out. It cannot die. That the one mind, our mind as life, is constantly, forever, in a self-creative impulse. It's always at work, being self-creative and self-sustaining. Now this brings us to the next idea which characterizes life, and that is that of self-sustaining. And we see that to sustain means, in its Latin root meaning, to hold under or to hold up. It means to bear, to uphold, to support, to hold, to keep from falling, to maintain, to keep alive. That's from the Webster Dictionary. And then sustain from the American Heritage Dictionary means to keep in existence, to maintain, to prolong, and so forth. That's what sustain means, to bear, to uphold. Maintain also has the connotation of to hold, to preserve, to support, to sustain. But maintenance means sustenance. It means support by means of supply, such as food and clothing. It means a means of support. So we can use these two words of sustaining and maintaining in this word, in this way. We can say that to sustain means to continue or to uphold. And something is sustained or upheld by proper maintenance, by proper means of support. Now, what are the divine facts behind this idea of self-sustaining? We see then that the one mind, or our mind as life, is self-existent then. It exists out of itself. It's self-creative. It draws out of itself. Therefore, it is self-sustaining. It needs no outside assistance for its support in order to maintain life. And the big point is here, is because our mind is self-sustaining, blood, food, matter, money, our strict adherence to medical laws, to material laws, these can neither support our life, maintain our life, that is God, and they cannot destroy our life.